This is A Closer Look with Arthur Levitt. Arthur Levitt is a former chairman of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, a Bloomberg LP board member, and a senior advisor to the Promontory Financial Group.
Dr. Alan Greenspan began his career in the research department of Brown Brothers Harriman before assuming leadership of his own consulting firm called Townsend Greenspan and Company. He served as chairman of the President's Council of Economic Advisors under President Gerald Ford, and in 1987 became chairman of the Federal Reserve until retiring in 2006, having served under Presidents Ronald Reagan, George Bush Sr., Bill Clinton, and George W. Bush. After leaving the Board of Governors, he began his own Washington, D.C.-based consulting firm, Greenspan Associates, LLC. He joins me now for a closer look. Alan, you've been warning that the United States faces a period of stagflation, marked by stagnant growth and rising inflation, as mounting entitlement spending crowds out private business investment. Have you heard anything from the presidential contenders to lead you to believe we can escape such a period of economic underperformance?
Well, it strikes me that all I hear about when they actually address the subject is more entitlement spending, not ways of cutting it back. And the problem is, unless and until that is done, this economy will continue to be stagnant. When I was talking about stagflation, that is an issue which is on the horizon. It's not immediate, but the very early stages are becoming evident in the sense that unit labor costs are beginning to rise, which is a crucial factor, as you know, in pricing. But also the money supply, which is a determinant of inflation, has started to accelerate. Now, it's very early in the game. The forces of deflation are actually still at work. So this is more of where we ultimately will come out, I believe. But I don't have a clue what the timing of it is.
Is stagflation inevitably precede a recession?
Well, stagflation may or may not be associated with inflation. Stagnation is one part of it, and it's not characterizable as a recession or recovery or anything. It's just dead in the water. What we've been having recently is productivity growth, as you know, of much less than 1% per year for a number of years. And this has created a growth rate in the GDP of less than 2% at an annual rate. Now, that's what stagnation is. I'm merely saying that we've had that in the past, but we've also had a condition in which inflation has arisen. And you may well remember it took Paul Volcker Herculean activities to restrain the money supply to get inflation back down. But what preceded that, people forget, was a stagnant economy growing without much zip in it. At the same time, inflation was beginning to generate.
Do you take particular comfort from the fact that the United States is outperforming most of its advanced nation peers?
No, because ultimately, if a number of, if the world in general is stagnating, there's no way the United States can continue to be a vibrant economy. We do, remember, have a significant interrelationship with the rest of the world. If the rest of the world shuts down, we feel it, and feel it importantly.
You've indicated that it's very difficult to recognize bubbles in real time. Are you concerned or fearful that low interest rates may be producing such bubbles?
Well, you know, Arthur, just one way of looking at low interest rates is the price-earnings ratio on interest monies is extremely high. And if you want to say that this is the early stages of potential bubble problems, I would say most certainly, because I cannot perceive that we can maintain these levels of interest rates for very much longer. They have to start to move up, and when they do, they could move up and surprise us with the degree of rapidity which may occur as a consequence.
What do you regard to be the greatest danger inherent in persistently low interest rates?
Well, the greatest danger is that they can't stay there. Obviously, there's a structural problem if they were to stay there, but it's not debilitating. Namely, for example, money market mutual funds can't function in this type of environment. And anything which relates to credit spreads can't do well, obviously. So, yes, there is a problem there, but it's not debilitating.
We'll continue this conversation with Dr. Alan Greenspan, former chairman of the Federal Reserve, in just a moment when we'll talk about Brexit and the Eurozone. This is A Closer Look with Arthur Levitt. It's 12 minutes past the hour. This is A Closer Look at Dr. Alan Greenspan, one of the world's most influential economists, who served as chairman of the Federal Reserve from 1987 to 2006. I'm Arthur Levitt. Alan, do you still feel that Brexit will harm economies more than the recession of 2008? That's a pretty dramatic statement.
I didn't make that statement, if you're attributing it to me. I think Brexit is a problem, but to compare it to 2008, remember in 2008, it was the greatest financial crisis ever, in the sense that not only did markets crash, prices crash, but for the first time in a very long, long time, markets actually shut down. The commercial paper market shut down. A money market mutual fund market shut down. In fact, it's unprecedented in recent memory. Brexit is nowhere even in the same ballpark.
I see. I thought at one point you did compare Brexit to that meltdown of 2008, but I'm glad you qualified that. Why do you say the European Union is a failed project?
The Eurozone project, the Euro itself, is a failed project. The Eurozone is a perfectly sensible type of structure, which we have many types of very successfully. The problem was to have a single currency with differing cultures backing it up. It's unworkable, and I think that it's shown that, especially since 2008.
Can the Eurozone be fixed in some way?
Well, the only way you could do it is there are a few of the countries, for example, I would say Germany, Finland, Austria, and a number of others all have very similar cultures, and their exchange rates don't move very much against each other. You could take four or five of the Eurozone countries and make them into a single currency unit. But it's not terribly obvious to me that that's a very great advantage to anybody. But you cannot have Southern Europe, which is essentially an inflationary culture. Before the euro showed up, there was a considerable continuous devaluation of the lira and a whole series of other Southern European currencies vis-a-vis the Northern European currencies. Now, you can have that as a functioning system with a fixed exchange rate. It will break down, as indeed it is showing the signs of in so many different areas.
Part of the current gloom, Alan, stems from skepticism that new technology will be able to lift U.S. productivity as it has in the past. And Robert Gordon, in his book on the rise and fall of American growth, argues that all the low-hanging fruit has been plucked. You headed the Fed during the productivity surge in the 90s, and you have often spoken about the importance of productivity. Are you still a productivity optimist?
Well, let me say this, and first of all, so that Bob Gordon's book is a first-rate book, and I would recommend it to anyone who wants to learn what forces in recent years are moving productivity. But he hesitates, actually, to forecast very far in the future because, in fact, innovation by its very nature is not forecastable by definition. Well, you can forecast short-term applications of productivity, and what Gordon does very cleverly and very sensibly is to show that there are times when a major change occurs, like indoor plumbing. Its critical effect on human beings, wherever applied, but you can't do that again. Nonetheless, there are all sorts of things which have occurred in the last 50 years which we wouldn't have even remotely anticipated 100 years ago.
In all of this, regulation, I think, can be recognized by most as kind of a brake on the economy. Dodd-Frank was passed during the financial crisis, and now we're about 7 years past that recession. What are the most significant changes, if any, you'd like to see in Dodd-Frank? And if you had a magic wand, would you wave it and make it disappear entirely?
Well, I would wave it. My first statement would be simple: repeal the Act. The Act was based on a conceptual framework of how financial markets and the economy interact, which frankly are false. That is not the way the world works. So when they introduced all of the various regulations, that they are not working, and they clearly are not working, it shouldn't come as a great surprise.
What would be the first on your priority list of changes to Dodd-Frank, assuming we can't repeal it in its totality?
I'm not even saying we should take piece by piece. I would basically say the whole framework starts off in the wrong direction, and we ought to go back and start from scratch.
He is best known for shepherding the U.S. economy through the longest expansion in history during his 18 years as chairman of the Federal Reserve. He's a best-selling author and founder of the D.C.-based consulting firm Greenspan and Associates. Dr. Alan Greenspan will return for part two of this interview next week at this same time. By the way, if any of you have comments about the show or suggestions for topics, please email me at aclosterlook@bloomberg.net. That's aclosterlook, one word, @bloomberg.net. This is A Closer Look with Arthur Levitt. It's 25 minutes past the hour.
This is A Closer Look with Arthur Levitt. Arthur Levitt is a former chairman of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, a Bloomberg LP board member, and a senior advisor to the Promontory Financial Group.
This week, we continue our closer look at Dr. Alan Greenspan. After a brief period as a professional jazz musician, he began a career in economics, eventually serving 18 years as the chairman of the Federal Reserve. He's been awarded the French Legion of Honor, the Knight Commander of the British Empire, and he received Medal of Freedom, the United States' highest civil award. He's the best-selling author of The Age of Turbulence, in the map and the territory, risk, human nature, and future of forecasting. And today, Dr. Greenspan heads Greenspan Associates, consulting firm in Washington, D.C. Ellen, how much do you feel that financial regulation is to blame for our stagnant U.S. economy?
Well, I think you can fully explain why the economy is stagnant by just looking at some simple data relationships. For the last 50 years, the sum of entitlements plus gross domestic savings as a percent of the GDP has been in an extremely narrow range, implying that for every dollar increase in entitlement spending, there was a $1 decrease in gross domestic savings. Now, gross domestic savings is very close to gross domestic investment. It's just an international flow of funds, minor item that reconciles the two. But if you get capital, private capital investment slowing down dramatically, as it has, as a percent of the GDP, you will invariably get output per hour slowing down. But output per hour is a critical statistic in the issue of what the growth in the economy is. And remember, if you took output per hour and the number of hours, you've got output. So the question is, if we are increasing, we're running out of people at this particular stage, we're getting to the point that there's no way we can go unless we increase either the working force population, which will be very difficult because most of them have now retired, or increase output per hour. But output per hour can't increase unless your gross domestic investment in the United States increases very substantially from its exceptionally low level as a percent of GDP that we've seen in recent years.
From the new administration, what would you consider to be the top economic priority starting from the inauguration?
I would say to control the entitlement programs, because in the direction we're going is continued stagnation, and politically that is unacceptable.
Do you believe that Congress has the will to control entitlements?
Well, they certainly act as though they don't, because both parties consider it the third rail of American politics. If you're running for office and you touch the third rail, you lose. And it is remarkable the extent to which, if you go back in history, entitlements have been growing at a rate of 9% a year since 1965, and the rate of growth is about the same for Democratic administrations and Republican administrations. Now, if you wanted to squeeze the numbers a little bit, it's a little more for Republican than Democratic, which sounds counterintuitive. But what is clear is that none of them want to touch this. You and I have gone through months and months and months of all this political rhetoric. When have you heard anybody say we have to cut back the rate of growth of entitlements from the 9% down to what is sustainable, which is probably 3 or 4% a year?
That's true, and we certainly don't see any signs of that coming up. If we were to get a change in terms of doing something about entitlements, is it any more likely to come from the executive branch than the legislative branch, or are they both in the same lockjaw position with respect to entitlements?
We describe it as lockjaw. Now, I don't see anything. Do you? I must admit I'm not watching it on an hour-by-hour basis, but I've been watching this campaign from both parties since it really got moving. and I've seen no evidence whatsoever to suggest that. All I've heard is more entitlements, not less.
We'll continue this conversation with former Fed Chairman Alan Greenspan in a moment. This is A Closer Look with Arthur Levitt. It's 12 minutes past the hour. This is a closer look at Dr. Alan Greenspan, former chairman of the Federal Reserve and one of the most powerful financial men in America. Alan, we were talking about debt, and you certainly described the perils of compounding debt. That there are arguments being made that with interest rates at this level, this is probably a good time to experience more debt. What's the counter to that argument?
Well, remember, there are two factors here. One is the interest rate, and the other is the level of debt. If you've built up a large amount of debt at a very low coupon rate, clearly you're working close to what the British used to do with their councils, where they have perpetual debt. I'm not even raising that issue. The reason is that it doesn't solve the problem, because at some point, if your rate, if debt is rising, to be sure, the debt that is very low coupon, especially if it's very long term, but that debt is going to mature at some point, and it's not going to mature at the interest rate that it originally was issued at, and that will come as a big problem to whichever administration is in power at that time, because it's very readily to see if you have a very large block of debt at a very low coupons, which is where we would go if we took the recommendation of people who are arguing this. It works fine in the short run, but that debt is going to eventually mature. And once it matures, the question is, what happens?
Well, I totally agree with you, and I've lived through the political churn in addressing this issue. It seems that Congress acts only at a time of crisis, and yet we certainly had a crisis in 2008. But if anything, I think that crisis probably led to the kind of thinking which raised the debt level rather than lowered it. Do you agree?
I agree with that.
Is it political will from the executive branch that would make the difference?
Well, let's say this. It is a political issue, 100% political. The issue can only be resolved politically. Now, we've had innumerable cases in the past. I mean, for example, Britain was in a much worse shape than we are when Margaret Thatcher took over and basically made major changes. So even when Margaret Thatcher was out of office and the government went towards labor, you had very little in the way of alteration of Margaret Thatcher's major revolution that she produced in Britain. That sort of thing, I think, happened with to a lesser extent with Ronald Reagan here, because remember, we had an incredible mess before he came into office. And it's only under those conditions, I mean, the severe conditions that existed in Britain that brought Thatcher, and the extreme conditions that existed in the United States that brought Ronald Reagan. We're going to get something like that, and I'm fearful of where it might turn out.
That's kind of a scary scenario. And what I hear you saying is that the legislative branch doesn't have the political will, and the executive branch, thus far and for the foreseeable future, doesn't appear to be ready to try to hold the feet of the legislative branch to the fire on recognizing the importance of doing something about entitlements. So it's a closed book.
Well, something is going to have to give. And I think that if, going back to some of our earlier discussions, if stagflation shows up on the horizon, the distorted economic structure may generate the type of political change that nothing else will.
What's the early warning sign that stagflation is on the horizon rather than a possible threat in the future?
On the stagnation side of the equation, we have this extraordinary slowing down. Over the last 5 years, output per hour, which is the critical ingredient of GDP growth, economic growth in general, that's been growing under 0.5% per year. And I might add parenthetically, it's true of all the developed countries have more or less significant reductions in the rate of growth of productivity. And indeed, my recollection is that virtually all of the developed countries is under 0.5%, or certainly under 1% annual rate of growth. So it's a global phenomenon. And I might say parenthetically, for the same reasons that we are having it here, we call it entitlements, they call it social benefits. The numbers look remarkably similar, country by country, which is essentially caused, incidentally, by the fact that the whole developed world is aging. The proportion of the population over 65 and over has been rising everywhere. And that's the critical determinant which is setting these entitlements to be moving where they're moving.
For 18 years and with four presidents, Dr. Alan Greenspan served as head of the Federal Reserve System and prior to that as chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers under President Ford. He's a New York Times best-selling author and chairman of the Washington-based consulting firm Greenspan Associates. Alan, thank you for joining us. And by the way, if any of the audience have comments about the show or suggestions for topics, email me at aclosterlook@bloomberg.net and follow me on Twitter at Arthur Levitt. This is A Closer Look with Arthur Levitt. It's 25 minutes past the hour.